Once upon a time in the year 1990, a young Bill Belichick is the defensive coordinator for the New York Giants, and he's holding a meeting with his defense. A defense that ranked fourth in rush yards allowed, a defense that limited Emmitt Smith to 39 yards in two games, a defense that held leading rusher Barry Sanders to 69 not-so-nice yards. And when the Giants played their upcoming Super Bowl opponents of the regular season, they held the Buffalo Bills running back Thurman Thomas, the Thurmanator, second in the league in rushing, to 60 yards. A defense that held his playoff opponents to a combined 66 yards in two games. Bill Belichick stands in front of his defense that prides itself on stifling opponents, and he tells them the key to victory, their best hope, is allowing Thurman Thomas to rush for at least 100 yards. The room loses their minds. They think he's crazy, but turns out Bill is crazy like a fox. His reasoning was he didn't want the Bills and their potent no-huddle K-gun offense throwing 45 times a game, that they could concede some yards on the ground, and they would, by supplanting their normal base defense for 5 and 6 defensive backs sets with only two down linemen. The more success the Bills had on the ground, the less they threw to James Lofton, to Andre Reed, and even Thurman Thomas, who Bill felt was more dangerous as a receiver. All three of them Hall of Famers. He also felt when they needed to stop against the run, the defense would nut up, plant their meat, and come through. He accentuated this game plan by emphasizing the need to hit the wide receivers as much as they possibly could. Batter them all game. Take their heads out of it. Test their will and make them wilt. The Giants held the Bills to 205 passing yards. The Bills only converted 1 of 8 third downs and owned the ball for a mere 19 minutes. The Giants would go on to win the Super Bowl, and Bill racked up 5 more rings as head coach of the New England Patriots. This is the evil genius Doug Peterson is up against. This is the greatest test Doug Peterson will ever face. This is Karpov v. Kasparov, Hannibal v. Scipio, Patton v. Rommel, if Rommel was actually in Africa, whatever. You see what I'm driving at? The living legend against the scrappy contender. Belichick, Peterson, Patriots, Eagles, for the heavyweight championship of the world. You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my external work for Inside the Pylon, follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com, follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I will be joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. It's where you can find his awesome draft work. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak, that's S-O-L-A-K. We are going to be doing part 2 of our series with Mark Schofield, the Locked On Patriots crossover, previewing this game, this big game, the Super Bowl. And this time, we're going to be talking Eagles offense against the Patriots defense. What can the Eagles do to move the ball against Matt Patricia and company? Let's kick it over to that right now. All right, the gang is back. Mark Schofield of Locked On Patriots, Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and Locked On Eagles. Guys, big news, real big news. There was a trade last night that went down. There were several sources that were right, and then they were wrong, and then they were right again regarding Kendall Fuller. Here's what happened. Alex Smith gets traded to the Washington Redskins for a 3rd-round pick and Kendall Fuller. And what is going on? Because, $70 million for Alex Smith is what the Redskins extended him for? 4 years, $94 million, $70 million. Let me ask you guys right off the bat, and whoever wants to take this can take this. Is this the loudest kicking of a can down the road that you've ever heard in the NFL?
Yeah, that was my first reaction to it. Okay, you have a quarterback of questionable value in Kirk Cousins. You haven't been able to decide what he means to you long term. And then you bring in a guy like Alex Smith, who is also of debatable value, depending on which system he is, who is older. And really, the only thing you don't have with Smith that you already had with Cousins was the noxious relationship, right? Now, the fact that they traded for him with an extension, whether or not you think that extension was a good idea, hint, you don't. It kind of removed that issue of figuring out what Smith's value was going to be at the end of his contract, because Smith only had 1 year left on his contract when he was still with Kansas City. But at the same time, do we think that the other 52 players on this Redskins roster are good enough that they can power a deep playoff run with Alex Smith under the helm? Because I like Alex Smith. I like the way he plays. I don't think the Redskins have that firepower. They just gave up an excellent slot corner and some pretty significant draft capital. Is Alex Smith taking you further than Kirk Cousins? That's where I'm not sold.
Let's ask the quarterback guru, Mark. What do you think?
I mean, look, first off, anytime you get a chance to let go of a 29-year-old quarterback for a 34-year-old quarterback.
You got to do
and
it.
And lock him up for 4 years, $71 million. I mean, we don't know the final numbers, but I saw at least one tweet last night from Mortensen that said it was like $71 million guaranteed.
That's guaranteed for injuries, the $71 million.
Okay, so that's what that is. But still, anytime you lock up Alex Smith for the next 5 years, you got to do it. No, I mean, I think what's interesting in sort of the evolution of Alex Smith over the course of the 2017 season was the knock on him coming into this year was won't stay aggressive, won't maintain aggression, won't throw the deep ball. There was some thought, you know, in the offseason that maybe, oh, you draft Patrick Mahomes, who's an aggressive quarterback who likes to slant it deep. Maybe some of that rubs off on Alex Smith a little bit. And he sees this is what I have to sort of do. And he does that for the first half of the season. Right. First five games, Alex Smith is your MVP. But then they go through that sort of brutal, like, what was it, 2-5 stretch?
Yeah.
Where it's suddenly, like, you see the old Alex Smith come to fruition where he's, like, not challenging windows. He's not pulling the trigger when he should. He's being that conservative guy. And he got it sorted out at the end. But when push came to shove, the closing minutes of that game, you know, third and fourth quarter against Tennessee, the same sort of conservative Alex Smith sort of rear his ugly head again when he's seeing ghosts in the pocket. He has a dig route over the middle. He doesn't pull the trigger. Third and nine on their final drive, bails from a clean pocket. It's just, is Smith a significant enough upgrade over Kirk Cousins? I don't think so, especially when you factor in the fact that Cousins was younger and I think is a better fit for what Gruden wants to do on offense. So I don't understand this move, but Washington has just screwed this up royally for the past couple of years. And I'm not just saying that because I'm down here. Like, anybody can see this. They just, like you said, Michael, kick this can down the road. They were going to have to pay a ton of money at the franchise tag him again or transition tag him. So at least they technically got something. And they just totally mishandled it, I think.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I mean, Alex Smith is a good quarterback. Bringing him in for that kind of capital and then losing a guy like Kendall Fuller, who I think is criminally underrated outside of regular, you know, football circles, like guys that pay attention to it like us. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kirk Cousins, where he may go. Ben has a big smile on his face. I'm wondering what he's snickering about over there. Was it because I called you smart?
No, I do appreciate that. I'm wondering, where is Dan Snyder's head? Because, like, what if we have some major takeaways from the past, I don't know, 10 years of football, it's quarterbacks are increasingly valuable, and when you get a good one, it's very important.
Right.
Oh, and also, like, the slot corner is now a starting position.
Right.
Like, those are two of our, like, biggest, most, like distinct, precipitated takes over recent modern football, and he just laughed in the face of both of them.
Yeah.
How you don't – just that lack of awareness is shocking. Now, Mike, for you and I, this is great.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Oh, fantastic. Let them mire in mediocrity along with the Cowboys and the Giants. You know, NFC East hasn't had a repeat winner since 2003, I believe it is. 2004 maybe was the year. Either way, looking good for 2018, obviously knock on wood. The fact is it's gross mismanagement from a franchise that – doesn't even have a great standing in the league to begin with. Redskins are a joke, man.
Yeah, and from my perspective now, I'm dealing with the possibility of facing Kirk Cousins twice a season now. Because obviously you have to think that the Jets are now in the mix for the Cousins sweepstakes, and I can't believe I just used the phrase the Cousins sweepstakes, but here we are. Oof. He's arguably the best sort of free agent quarterback in recent history, which, again, crazy. But I know Denver's probably in the lead. They have to do a lot from a cap space standpoint to free stuff up to lead, probably being the cap sort of casualty there. But there's a chance that, you know, Cousins ends up in the AFC East and the Jets upgrade a quarterback.
All very interesting stuff. And look, we've given enough minutes to bad football teams. We have two very good football teams to talk about here as we preview for the Super Bowl, that we have all offseason to talk about Alex Smith and the terrible Washington Redskins. So let's get into it. Last time we did the Eagles defense against the Patriots offense. This time we're going to flip it. Patriots defense against the Eagles offense. Man, that
good
is
plan,
a tongue twister.
You got it. Nailed it.
I nailed it this time. First time, last time, it did not work out so well. Anyway, I want to talk about 11 personnel.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah, well, I'm not going there yet. Because
you're gonna save that one in the holster?
I'm gonna save that one.
Kinda like your trump card?
I'm gonna rant on that one. What I do want to talk about is Eagles using 12 and 13 personnel, so two tight ends, three tight end sets. They use it 34% of the time. They have 137% 137 QB rating when passing out of it. The Panthers, the Chiefs, the Texans all use this grouping against the Patriots for at least 15 snaps. And all of them had a 99 quarterback rating or better against the Patriots. And only the Texans didn't average over 5 yards per carry against the Patriots from those groupings. So this is something that I could see the Eagles doing along with their 11 personnel, which is a very favorable matchup for them in the run game, and we'll get into that. But this is something I could see the Eagles using effectively from the passing game. I think you might see a flip for them where 11 personnel is the way they attack via the run, at least more than most teams do, because I think they're the third heaviest leaning run team at 11 personnel. And then when they go to 12 and 13 personnel, mostly 12 personnel, you're going to see them pass more than other teams would. Ben, do you think we'll see more 12 personnel from this game, or do you think we stick in 11 and spread the box out, spread the safeties out, and try to get those favorable numbers in the box?
To me, it's more 11. That's what I expect, simply right. because that's where I think your offense is more comfortable. I think it's easy for us to forget that we are watching Nick Foles' sixth kind of start. You know, I think that's going to be the number that you choose if you count the Cowboys game as the start. Obviously, he finished up the Rams game as well. And so while they've really been able to open up the playbook, we've heard so much about Doug Peterson going back into the 2013 Chip Kelly playbook and finding, you know, pieces of little nuggets there to deploy into his team. It's a slightly different look with Foles under center, but still you're not at 100% strength of your offense. So while I think maybe they do come out with a 12 personnel, 13 personnel package, to me, you're still running things out of 11. That's the basic way you like to do things. And yeah, I'd prefer to see all game intentional lighter boxes by formation and by personnel for Philadelphia than I'd like for them to see, you know, bringing in heavier guys on the Patriots defense and then spreading them out. I think that the motor for the offense is going to be the run game against the Patriots. And so I would expect them to try to keep the box a little bit lighter, because Philadelphia's offensive line is a huge advantage over the Patriots front seven. There's no reason to muddy that by getting like Brent Celek and Trey Burton involved. You know what I'm saying? Like, just keep your five excellent players out there. You got a great offensive line. Let them do work.
All right. And Mark, what do you think about the Patriots defense? Do you think it's beneficial to them if the Eagles use more 12 personnel rather than spreading them out?
I mean, I kind of do think it would sort of help New England if Philadelphia comes out, they go 12, they go 13. They allowed, you know, New England to get away from what they've been doing recently. And they've been going light boxes anyway. I mean, you look at that game against Pittsburgh, probably the most pivotal play of that game. It's a 3rd and 4 in the fourth quarter. They need a stop to get the ball back and have a chance to win that game. You think 3rd and 4, they're going to run it with Le'Veon Bell. New England goes 4 down linemen, 7 defensive backs. I mean, that's the package that they looked at. And they basically said, look, if you want to run it, fine. We're going to make sure we stop the pass. And that's kind of been New England's MO this year. You know, they give up yardage, but it's been sort of a bend but don't break type philosophy. They'll go a lot of dime packages with 6 DBs. They'll go dollar with 7 DBs. I mean, that's what they've been doing this year. And so, you know, again, we're getting deep into Super Bowl week now, where we've all been overthinking things too much. And I'm starting to wonder if they're really going to come out and play a lot of 6-7 defensive backs and say, look, if you guys want to run the ball, fine, but we're going to make you earn drives. We're not going to give you cheap stuff deep. We're not going to come out and sort of base personnel and sort of get beaten deep. We're going to make sure you have to, quote unquote, matriculate the ball down the field. And let's not forget, for all the stuff that people have said this year about this Patriots defense, how they've given up so many yards, how they've been getting torched left and right, you know, by Carolina early, by Houston early, obviously by Kansas City open at night. When it comes down to it, the job of a defense is to keep mm-hmm. points off the board. Mm-hmm. And this is the 5th best scoring defense, giving up 18.5 points per game. Eagles are the 4th best scoring defense at 18.4. I mean, when it comes down to the main job of a defense, these are basically the two evenly matched scoring defenses in the league, 18.4 and 18.5 points per game. So they'll get yardage. The Eagles will get yardage. They'll run the ball. But can they finish drives? That's the big question, I think.
Yeah, and a big key for them in running the ball is going to be using that 11 personnel, which we'll get into real quick here. So Jay Ajayi, who I think is going to be a key to this game, takes around 70% of his runs from 11 personnel. That's one running back, one tight end, and then around 70% of them in shotgun. He's been extremely effective from that setup. He's averaging, it's a small sample size for him, but I've seen as high as 12 yards per game just because he's busted off some big ones in his limited sample size. So I want to see 20 runs from Ajayi, or, you know, split it with Blunt or whatever the case may be. But 15 or 18 of those 20, whatever that percentage is, you know, 66% or 75% of those runs coming from the shotgun with one tight end. Don't allow the Patriots to get their 4-3 even front base and drop Chung into the box. Spread them out, run your offense. This is simple stuff for the Eagles, in my opinion. They just have to run the offense. They've ran all year, and I think the results will come. So expect to see Ajayi from the shotgun, Blunt from under center, and then overall expect the Eagles to be in shotgun 70% of the time. And from there, they are the third heaviest run-leaning team in the NFL, like I mentioned. So I know I'm beating that point to death today, but I really think this sets the Eagles up to have success on first down, which we've talked about this on this show at length. Set Foles up in plus situations so that they can convert on second down before you have to get to that third down. And like Mark, you alluded to, maybe the Patriots are fine with bringing out 5 to 6 men, you know, as defensive backs. And in the beginning of this show, you know, the little promo that we had there, we talked about how Belichick did that as a defensive coordinator for the New York Giants against the Buffalo Bills because they didn't get the chunk plays. You know, they didn't get the big time plays from the passing game. I don't know if they're that fearful of Foles in that regard as they were as Jim Kelly and all the weapons there with Lofton and whatnot and Reed. But I do think that they might try a little bit, and they might try to force them to run and then dare them to pass. And then when they do pass, really be at, you know, take advantage of it. Ben, as far as the run game, what do you expect? Do you expect to see anything different from what I just detailed as far as Ajayi from 11 and then Blunt from under center?
Yeah, it's really like I agree with you very much in the sense that it feels like Philadelphia should continue to do that, which they've been good at all year, and they'll find success, which, like, right. Usually if you're a regular Locked On Eagles listener, you know that every week Mike and I are coming in with, oh, like, do this specific and change that, do another thing. It feels very weird to be coming into the Super Bowl against the Patriots and be saying, do the offense, don't really change very much. You know what I mean? When we talk about Philadelphia running the football very effectively, one of the reasons you see them do so is because so often their runs are tagged to the pass option, and that does help remove one defender from the equation. That is how you lighten the box. We talk about lightening the box. You take one defender out of the box, one less defender for your offensive lineman to block. So that's why you see a lot of success there. It should be noted, I think, that I'm most interested in how the rushing game gets translated into the red zone for Philadelphia. Right. That's where I'm most curious to see how things happen. Well, as Mark's been saying, Philadelphia is going to be able to pick up yardage on New England, period. I'd love to see them do it heavily through the rushing attack because, number one, that takes up time. And number two, I think your running game is far less likely to turn the ball over than Nick Foles, right? So those are, I think, two very compelling reasons to run the football down the field. However, once you get into the red zone, Philadelphia tends to be a very pass-heavy team in the red zone. You know, Doug Peterson loves to use his spacing concepts. He does an excellent job cutting the field in half and figuring out how to open up a throwing window for his quarterback in the red zone. That's been a strength of Peterson's all year. When they get into the red zone, will they choose to then throw the football, put it in Nick Foles' hand? Windows are tighter in the red zone. You need to have anticipation, which is something with which Foles struggles. You know, you have to be a little bit more aggressive of a passer, and that's definitely not Foles' game. So that's where I'm most curious to see how things go. Because for all the wonderful things about it, Philadelphia's offensive line doesn't necessarily have the mass to just pile drive people for 4 yards and then do it again for 3 yards and do it again for 2 yards and score. That's not really the game. It's a lot of motion-based sort of stuff. You could see Doug get super creative in the red zone. They've had 2 weeks to prepare, so you could see a lot of different crazy stuff thrown out there as well. I think that Philadelphia runs the ball successfully. I envision, you know, Jay Ajayi, we're still kind of waiting. Does he have one 100-yard game this year? I'm not positive if he's broken it yet. I think Ajayi hits 100 in this game. That's my anticipation. And to me, it's very interesting to see, are they going to bring out Blunt as your red zone goal line back? That's where I'm most curious to watch in this game.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the passing game too, because I say Ajayi 20 carries is what I want. But if he gets that look pre-snap and they dare him to pass and the box numbers indicate that he should pass, then we have to pass. You have to take advantage of that. And we'll get into that in a second. And we want to talk real quick about our friends over at mybookie.ag. The big game is here. It's time to cash in big and bet the game at the world's best betting site. Ben, can you rank the top 3 betting sites in the universe?
All right, so number one overall is mybookie.ag. Number two is mybookie.ag.
Right.
And number three is mybookie.ag. Those are the top 3 if memory serves. All spelled the same, incidentally. Very interesting. It's the pronunciations that differ.
Mark, who's number 4 and number 5?
Well, I think mybookie.ug is next. And then I think that's the French pronunciation of that, because it's huge. My bookie is huge in France, by the way, because Macron, you know, the new sort of leadership in France, they've sort of turned the economy around. So the French, they have a little bit more capital to spend in their spare time. And so they've been betting heavy on the NFL this year. And they've been using the fourth biggest betting website in the world, which is mybookie.ug.
I like that. Look, if you've got a hunch on who's going to win the coin toss or what color Gatorade the winning coach is going to be wearing. By the way, yesterday we covered prop bets here on LockedOnEagles.com. My lock of the week was pink is going to be airborne at some point. Go bet on that prop bet. Log on now.
You don't spend the Star Spangled Banner, a revered and sacred song, in the air, Michael.
Bad bet.
You don't know Pink like I know. That's her thing. That's absolutely her thing. That's why it's a prop bet.
The Wentz mentions over. That's the easiest one of the week, right?
Oh, most definitely. Wait, that one's not on my bookie. Is this NBC?
Yeah, it's NBC.
Yeah.
I got to mute Chris Collinsworth for 3 hours. Help me.
He's going to come in with the Carson Wentz narrative, and it's going to stick for the entire game. You absolutely know it. But yeah, that one's on a different site that we're not going to talk about. No free ads. So don't just watch the game, guys. Lay down some money. Be part of it. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag, the industry-leading online sports book. Its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business when they win. How fast, Ben?
The fastest. Light speed, baby.
They turn the light out. They're in bed before the light shuts off. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and my listeners. That's why I urge you to make your way to mybookie. You win, they pay, without any hassles. You're wasting your time. Your precious time betting anywhere else. They even have in-game live betting so you can place a bet after kickoff. Join now. Score free cash to place your Super Bowl wager on the house. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's right, promo code LOCKEDON. If you join right now, you get an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. Put in $100. They'll give you $150 to bet on pink being airborne. I'm telling you, it's my MyBookie Lock of the Week. Play, win, get paid. Let's get to this passing game. Mark. So, with Nick Foles, duplicatable in any way? You're the QB guru here.
Yeah, I mean, I think he can have a duplicate performance like that, but it's going to depend on how quickly he sort of gets into the flow of this game because, you know, I mentioned, you know, my nightmare scenario than the last show, you know, when the Patriots have the ball. My nightmare scenario for this game from a Patriots perspective is you get confident Nick Foles early in the game who starts getting into rhythm, starts sort of feeling things. That deep throw to Alshon Jeffrey on the scramble drill situation really sort of has me worried from a standpoint of, historically speaking, Patriots have failed at sometimes to close out Super Bowls because they failed to get the quarterback to the ground and they had their hands on him. And they're going to need to do that with Foles because a momentum type swing play where he gets, evades a sack in the backfield, makes a scramble drill situation play happen like they did against the Vikings in the NFC Championship game. You know, those are the kinds of plays that the Patriots can't give up. They have to take away those chunk plays. They have to take away those big type plays, the flea flickers, the scramble drill ones. And that's why I think, you know, we might see a lot of light boxes, a lot of 6-7 DB sets. So they're going to give you stuff underneath. They don't want Philadelphia to get it all in bunches. They want Nick Foles to go out there and earn it. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit when we talked about the Patriots off, and Schwartz's sort of mentality is, I want you to make 10 throws, 8 throws a drive to sort of earn your touchdown. And that's one thing when you're talking about Tom Brady doing it. I think it's another thing entirely when you're talking about Nick Foles doing it in his first Super Bowl.
Right. Trust in Nick Foles, Ben? What do you got?
I've been framing it this way all week. If you haven't heard me say it yet, here it comes again. Foles can give you at least what Jacksonville got out of Blake Bortles, in my opinion. And Jacksonville, out of Blake Bortles, had a two-possession lead on the Patriots in the third quarter. Jacksonville, with Blake Bortles, was in a position to win that game. Play calling got a little bit ugly. So I think that I'll put it to you this way. Brady's not going to, like, submarine this game, right? Brady's not going to blow it. The Patriots are not going to whiff. There's always, like, that, you know, sliver of a chance that the Eagles just whiff. Nick Foles is a very high-variance player. You know, things get wonky, things get crazy. You know, a couple of bad interceptions early, you know, just falls down. You know, think about that Seattle Broncos Super Bowl. We saw Peyton Manning crumble on live television. You know, there is that chance that, there's a big self-destruct for Nick Foles. But I have faith in him with the two-week prep as a veteran, familiar with this offense, being able to do enough to facilitate the game plan. That's why and I don't think it's a bad thing. I foresee Philadelphia really relying heavily on the run game. That's what I would love for them to see. And I know we're talking about the passing game now. I'd love to see Philadelphia get the backs involved more in the passing game, in my opinion. I think that as far as the most motivated player you're going to find on the field on Sunday night is going to be Jay Ajayi, right? Because I've been thinking about it all week in the sense that, you know, when Ajayi won that NFC championship and he was just on the ground there, you know, crying, you know, this means so much to him because of the struggles that he had in Miami. And he, you know, he hears the nonsense about, you know, he's got a short career ahead of him because of the structural, you know, failures within his knee and so on and so forth. So I really think that Ajayi, it finds this moment to be precious. I'd love to see them get Ajayi involved early in the passing game as well. I'd love to see, you know, quick little stuff to Aguilar, stuff behind the line of scrimmage, anything to keep Foles moving and get him into a gentle rhythm, these low risk throws. That's where I'd like to see the Philadelphia offense work. If that's the offensive game plan, Foles can execute that to a T, no problem. If we're talking more of the downfield shots, which I don't anticipate, but if we're talking more of the downfield shots, then, yeah, Foles used a lot of his good quota against the Vikings. I don't know how much room he's got left here for the last game of the season. I'd like to see them come out more conservatively with Foles. Hey, if he's feeling it, unleash him, right? But let's ease him into it.
The interesting thing about that Foles throw to Alshon, when you replay it, you can actually see him look up straight to the sky before the ball even leaves his hand. He was chucking that. He was putting everything into that thing, man.
And if you watch that, you see the defensive back over Jeffrey peek his eyes into the backfield because he thinks, you know, Foles is going to get sacked.
Right.
And that's instantly when Jeffrey takes off. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it's a great play by Jeffrey. It's a great sort of feel for that situation. But that's what I'm talking about. Like, A, if you're a Patriots defensive back, like, you have to cover till the whistle, period, full stop. Yeah. You should be doing that anyway. But Patriots defenders, if you've got a shot at Foles, not let the Patriots pass rush is something fierce, but they've been able to do some stuff sort of in the last, you know, quarter, third of the season.
They've been more aggressive. Yeah.
Trey Flowers, Dietrich Wise. They've been doing some stunts with Butler inside, Malcolm Brown at times. They'll get a couple of shots at Foles. They have to take advantage of that, get Philadelphia into second and long, into third and long, where a lot of the playbook gets cut by, you know, half, and there's only so many things you can do to pick up the yardage you need for a first down.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because the Patriots do stunt at a very high rate. They have been blitzing at a very high rate as well to try to manufacture some of that pass rush. I like Ben's point about passing the running backs more often. I think you could also see that from the Patriots. James White had 16 targets and 14 receptions for the Patriots in the Super Bowl last year. That'll mitigate a pass rush for sure, make things easier on your quarterback. I could see the Eagles doing the same thing. Matchups. We have any matchups that we like, Mark, that we want to talk about, or you just kind of want to go through maybe one of your favorite ones?
I mean, I think from a New England perspective, I think you kind of like the matchups on the outside.
Right.
I mean, obviously, I think we're all sort of anticipating Gilmore on Alshon Jeffrey, and Gilmore's had a really good sort of last half of the season. I think the matchup between Malcolm Butler and whether it's Hollins out there, or whether it's Torrey Smith out there, I think that's a semi-favorable matchup for New England. Probably maybe more evenly matched, I'd say, but still, you know, that might tilt in New England's favor. I think the one that everybody's pointing to is in the slot between Aguilar and Rowe. And, you know, I think Aguilar has really sort of had a nice little turnaround season for him. He's kind of been a big player for Philadelphia. I can see him getting some open looks out of the slot against Eric Rowe. And I'm sure Doug Peterson is going to try to design some stuff, you know, whether it's quick game or whether it's even some deeper stuff, whether it's Mills or something, to try to get him looks underneath against Rowe. And that's the one that probably concerns me the most. I know you guys might go, you know, Zach Ertz versus Patrick Chun, but for me, you know, it's Rowe Aguilar.
Yeah, I agree with Rowe Aguilar, and you remind me of a very good point, Mark. When we talk about the deep shots that could potentially be taken, in my opinion, Aguilar on Rowe is the one, because if I remember anything about Nelson Aguilar or about Eric Rowe, it's that when his back is to the football, he's got no idea what's going on whatsoever. Yeah. Right. So that very much interests me as far as the deep shots. I'm not into 50-50 balls to Jeffrey on the sideline. I'm not very into let's burn Stephon Gilmore with Torrey Smith. That doesn't really ring with me. Aguilar out of the slot and that little slot fade, however, that little stab concept they like, I'm down with that. To me, the biggest matchup, Philadelphia offense-wise, is going to be Big B versus X, right? And whether that's Dietrich Wise, you know, Trey Flowers, whoever it is that gets there. Because I'll tell you this, one thing that I expected better from Minnesota and from Atlanta that we didn't see was attacking Big V and forcing Philadelphia, you know, to scheme him more help than they have been doing. Because Philadelphia's been scheming him a decent amount of help, but it hasn't been world-ending. And both the Falcons and the Vikings were kind of content to take their admittedly very good edge rushers in Tack McKinley and Everson Griffin and say, beat him, like just beat Big V one-on-one. Big V's held his own pretty well. The help has been helpful. That's kind of the goal. I expect after 2 weeks of prep, a guy like Matt Patricia to come out with a, especially when he doesn't have a premier edge, you know, obviously these, you know, Wise and Flowers, they're good, but he doesn't have that premier edge who, you know, should be able to beat Big V rep after rep. I think he's more likely to have some scheme pressures attacking that left side.
Yeah.
And so this is a big, big, big game for Halepulivahti Baitai, especially because while I'm not still buying it, Mike, I don't think you are either, he's put in enough good performances that this front office is going to spend some time thinking about him as the left tackle of the future. Yeah. And so this could be a huge game for him.
Yeah, I can see some stunts and blitzes coming his way. Okay, any other big topics that we want to talk about before we move on to predictions, or how are you guys feeling about that?
Well, Michael, what's the matchup you're looking at?
Oh, it's Aguilar. I mean, you guys covered it against Eric Rowe for sure. And you know, if we can get Ertz or Burton on someone that's not McCourty, then I like that too, against the linebackers or against the safety, especially in the red zone. I think that's advantageous for the Eagles all day, every day. So yeah, that's really what I'm looking at. But you guys covered it pretty well.
We have to talk about special teams, Mike. Remember, we haven't done this all year. All right, here's your 30-second special teams analysis. Steven Gostkowski versus Jake Elliott. Jake Elliott advantage just on being young and kicking it really far, even though Gostkowski's the man. Listen, Jake Elliott is the brand, okay? Advantage over anybody. Punters, Ryan Allen versus Donnie Jones, no context. Holder, Ryan Allen versus Donnie Jones, no context. Punt returner versus, that's Danny Amendola. And who returns punts for the Eagles now? Kenyon Barner, Amendola. Kick returner, Deion Lewis against, probably still Kenyon Barner, still Deion Lewis. Okay, Jake Elliott is the saving grace of Eagles special teams. Everybody else either a push or is New England. Boom.
Done.
Very nice, Ben.
This has been Special Teams Analysis with Ben Solak.
30 seconds of special teams. Beautiful. Okay, guys, predictions. Mark, I'm going to start with you. And you can use the line. You can say that the Eagles will cover, and you can leave it at that if you want. If you want to be a coward about it. But
no, I mean, I've said this everywhere this week. I'll say it here again. I think it was, is it still 4.5?
Yeah.
I saw 5 recently, but go ahead.
You saw 5?
Yeah. Huh.
We'll go with 4.5. I think the Eagles do cover that. I would take the points, but I think this game is a 28-24 New England win. I still think it's one of those one-score games that the Patriots have played in so many Super Bowls, but I think that they have just enough. Philadelphia ties, tacks one on late, doesn't recover the onside kick. New England wins.
And you can at him at Mark Schofield.
Yeah, please do.
And Ben.
And I dropped this. I actually dropped this on my show. I'll drop it here again.
Yeah.
240-670-6016.
Oh, my God. What are you doing?
You can leave numbers. I'm doing a Super Bowl Saturday edition show. Call that number. Leave a message. Text that number. Drop some takes. I'll work them into the show. Yeah. Do it up, people.
Oh, so it's just a voicemail. That's... I was going to say, that would be insanity that you would do that on this show.
You think I'm dropping my cell? I don't even give you my cell.
Bro, I don't know what you're doing. Yeah, you're a crazy person, Ben.
I am a crazy man.
How do you have it?
So I've got 31-26 for Philadelphia. A lot of analytics go into this one. That's a missed 2-point conversion is the analytic right there. I like Philadelphia, and it's going to feel weird. It's going to feel gross. I like Philadelphia to take a lead and then maintain a lead. I mean, maybe it'll go back and forth a little bit, but I think that you've got one of the best scripters in the game, if not the best scripter in the game, in Doug Peterson. So I think Philadelphia will be able to come out and score early. I think that you're going to – this has been a team of emotion since Carson Wentz went down. And we saw what happened when you got a ton of emotion like Seattle in that Super Bowl. I know it's the second time I brought it up, but you get them going early with a couple of good plays to start, a couple of good breaks, then it'll go their way early. Patrick Robinson pick 6.
Right.
And this team will just snowball down the mountain. And I think that Doug Peterson is incredibly good at getting them into situations to start strong early. And that is the best first quarter offense in the league, bar none. And so I think that Philadelphia is able to jump out to a lead. I like them to have 31-20 coming there into the fourth. You know, you're going to get Brady with the ball about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, probably. I think he goes down the field and scores. Eagles are able to hold the 2-point conversion, recover the onside kick, and then leak things down long enough that Brady can't bring it all the way back. I know this. If the Eagles do have the lead, at the end of the fourth, while obviously my mind wants them to have the ball, I'd love to see this defense up against Brady fourth quarter drive. I just think that'd be so much fun. Like, what a storyline. That's what watching football is all about, win or lose. You know what I mean? But I like the Eagles, 31-26.
Yeah, I didn't detail my prediction as much as you, Ben, but I'm going 28-24 Eagles. I think they jump out quick, like you said, best first quarter team in the NFL. they are going to keep their foot on the pedal for just long enough to stave off Brady. Dude, if they get a play like Patrick Robinson had on that pick six to tie it up with the Vikings, as soon as that play happens, to me, that's exactly what that team needs. They will roll for a good while on that momentum. And also, Tecmo Bowl news. Tecmo Bowl had a simulation of the game. It was 16-10, 1:18 left. Patriots down, Brady with the ball. They drive to the 33-yard line. We've seen this movie before, right? Drive to the 33-yard line. There's a wide-open receiver on the right sideline with 8 seconds left. And the safety comes over and bats it away just in time. I'm going with Tecmo Bowl. Eagles win. Guys, got anything else for the gentle listeners?
I'm just scrolling through this Madden scenario here where there's chaos in the fourth quarter. I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah, another overtime game, 30-30 into overtime. Elliott misses a field goal.
Oh,
Danny Amendola for a 52-yard touchdown.
You're drunk if you think Jake Elliott can hit the field goal backwards with his heel. All right, Mark?
I'm just, don't shoot the messenger, my friend. I am just relaying this Madden sim that was over at CBS. So I'm just saying.
Look, Mutt is a cash cow for Madden. They haven't been the same since they brought that in. That game hasn't been the same since they got the vision cone out. Tecmo Bowl is the true king of simulation football.
Can we just pause for a few minutes here and opine about the vision cone?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm right there with you, man. Like, why they ever got rid of that? It was the dumbest decision EA Sports ever made.
Because it wasn't widely accessible.
Get rid of NCAA.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah.
What is this?
The vision cone.
The vision cone.
Madden 06. So basically, in Madden 06, they had this cone, right? Awareness for quarterbacks doesn't matter when you're a user in Madden because you're controlling them. The awareness is your awareness. So what they did was they created this cone, and you could move it with the right analog stick back and forth between your receivers, or you could hold down L2 and you could click their buttons and you could snap to them, right? But if you threw look to where you were looking outside of this cone, it would be wildly inaccurate. You're more accurate in the cone. So you could look off safeties and it would decrease awareness of the players, of the defensive players not in that cone. I balled out on that game, man. I made so much money that year with Madden. They need to bring back the vision cone. And if they brought back the vision cone inside a new NCAA, I would quit my job and I would become a professional NCAA player for sure. No doubt.
Aren't you going to do that anyway?
I mean, I already put my 2 weeks in because I figure I can make all my money writing about football, right?
Well,
and betting on Pink
going airborne, yeah.
You play, you win.
You get paid. Look, Pink going airborne and Justin Timberlake wearing red shoes and also wearing a hat while he covers Prince is my bookie locks of the week.
So what song is he going to cover?
Purple Rain.
Purple Rain?
Yeah, Purple Rain. Yeah.
That's probably the easy bet, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not currently asking the producers to Google famous Prince songs because I definitely know some Prince songs.
we'll run some tape here. We'll give you some time here.
Doves Cry is my guess.
Oh, that's a good. With actual doves flying out?
See, that would be a nice moment.
Doves wearing hats. What's the prop bet on doves wearing hats?
Mike, can't put doves in hats, man.
Don't tell me that. Because I will prove you wrong. All right, guys. It has been a blast. You got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles and Patriots. I've been at Michael Kist NFL. That's Mark Schofield at Mark Schofield. Check him out at InsideThePylon.com, LockedOnPatriots.com. That's been Benjamin Solak at Benjamin Solak, S-O-L-A-K. Fly, Eagles, fly. Hit him with the caca, Ben.
Always, like, Mark, I feel so bad for you. Patriots don't make sounds, so you got nothing.
I'll leave you guys with this. You guys need to Google something. New England, the Patriots, and we. I'm just going to say, go Google it. Laugh all you want when you watch it. I'll just leave it there.
The Patriots and we? That is incorrect.
New England, the Patriots, and we. It's from the year they got steamrolled by the Bears in the Super Bowl. That was their like retort to the Super Bowl shuffle. It's like giving the response to the State of the Union speech. Like, this was a piece of art. Like, why even respond? Like, you're just going to make it worse. Anyway, that's my rant. I'm done.
Hit him again.
I'm gonna hit him again. Save that for Friday.
All right. Fair enough.